from WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. One way or the other, last week was a turning point in Washington, in Syria, and in Afghanistan. The president did what presidents almost always want to do. He announced he's bringing the troops home. But the way President Trump did it, without consultation and seemingly without regard for any blowback, has caused a storm of protests from many Republican and Democrats and from allies abroad. And it's cost the president his Secretary of Defense. This hour on Point, President Trump, Defense Secretary Mattis, and the pullouts from Syria and perhaps even Afghanistan. And you can join us. Are you glad the president finally ordered a U.S. withdrawal from Syria? Or are you concerned by the way he's handling things and by General Mattis's resignation? Are you worried about what will happen to our Kurdish allies on the ground in Syria and what message this sends other U.S. allies? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Well, joining me first today from Philadelphia is Leo Shane, reporter for the Military Times, who covers Congress, Veterans Affairs, and the White House. We have links to his reporting at onpointradio.org. Leo, it's great to have you back on the show, and thank you for making time on Christmas Eve today.
No, thank you for the invite.
So first of all, let's talk about what just happened on Sunday when President Trump announced that he would not wait until the end of February for Secretary Mattis's resignation, as was originally planned, but that he wants Mattis out at the beginning of the year on January 1st. What happened there? Why the sudden shift?
Yeah, it's really been just nonstop since Secretary Mattis announced his resignation last Thursday. He had originally said that he planned on staying on in the role until late February to minimize the disruption on the Department of Defense. You know, they're going to get a new Joint Chiefs Chairman next year. He had seen a 2-month window as a sort of calm, orderly way to exit. But in that resignation letter, he took several shots at President Trump's foreign policy and national security policy that clearly got under the president's skin. So the president announced on Sunday that he's not going to wait till the end of February. He's going to push Mattis out at the end of this year. January 1st, we'll have a new acting defense secretary, and we'll get into the process of selecting a new nominee, get into the permanent process later on. Really does leave the Defense Department in more disarray than I think Secretary Mattis had hoped he would be leaving in.
Right. So then what impact does it have on I see here that Secretary Mattis has signed the withdrawal order from Syria. I mean, what impact does his now sudden departure have on, you know, on this next move, this big move that the president wants to make?
Right. Well, we've seen this happen with some other agencies, too. Patrick Shanahan, who's the number two with the Pentagon, he'll take over as acting deputy secretary. So it's not as if there's no one running the Pentagon. But, you know, it does become harder to make sweeping changes to set overarching policies if you don't have a permanent leader in place. Last year, when David Shulkin was forced out of the Veterans Affairs Department, we had 3 or 4 months without a permanent secretary. There were still plenty of business, still plenty of business going on, still plenty of big decisions, but, you know, on Capitol Hill, there wasn't that big advocate. There wasn't that public face to talk about why certain decisions were being made. So as we're talking about, you know, a rapid withdrawal of troops from Syria and a large withdrawal of troops from Afghanistan, too, we're going to, you know, the country is going to be lacking a spokesperson for the military who can really speak on authority about what these moves mean and how it affects things. From the perspective of folks on Capitol Hill, the Pentagon is going to be lacking a key voice, a key counselor for the president. Not that Shanahan won't be talking to him, but, just being an acting secretary doesn't carry the same weight as being the permanent Pentagon leader there.
Yeah, so we'll talk more about Shanahan here in just a second. But, you know, I'm seeing reports of a high degree of uncertainty amongst top military officials right now, given the incredible tumult we've seen in the past several days. I mean, what's your sense about how the Pentagon right now is looking upon the relationship that the U.S. military armed forces has with the president of the United States?
Yeah, it's not good right now. Mattis was beloved, in the ranks. We did a poll back in September. We do a poll every few months, just looking at the military's attitude on a whole bunch of political issues. And one of the things we've seen consistently since the start of the Trump administration is that Mattis is wildly popular. We're talking about 85% give him a favorable rating. Among officers, it's even higher. very well respected on Capitol Hill. He was confirmed 99-1. So now with him leaving, and not just him leaving, but him leaving in, you know, issuing a resignation letter where he says he expresses serious concerns about how Trump is handling national security, that's just causing shockwaves through a lot of senior leadership who saw Mattis as the adult in the room, saw Mattis as the calm voice that they could rely on, and no matter what else was going on with a tumultuous administration, they knew that Jim Mattis was in there advocating for responsible defense policy. Now that's out the door, and if Trump doesn't have Mattis's faith, there's going to be a lot of senior military leaders who also look around and say, well, why am I sticking here? Am I staying here for the right reasons?
Wow. Okay. So, I mean, so we're talking about tremors that could last for quite a while.
Yeah, I mean, it remains to be seen exactly how this happens. And, you know, Trump's pick to replace Mattis is going to be very important in this regard. The military serves. It's a voluntary military. A lot of these folks have contracts that come up every couple of years. And especially the senior leaders, they're going to have to decide, is this a time that I want to stick around, or is this a time where I want to say, all right, look, it's time for me to step away, it's time for me to retire and let somebody else take the mantle. I'm certainly not suggesting any sort of, uprising in the military or disobeying orders or saying, but this is going to be one that makes a lot of people look around and say, all right, is this an administration that I still feel confident in? Largely because Mattis was such a popular figure. We did see this in the Obama administration to a much lesser extent, mm-hmm. where senior leaders who didn't like Obama's policies started to step away, not en masse, but just in terms of saying, well, I'm not going to, why would I sign up for another 2 or 4 years here if I don't agree with how the administration's going? I think a lot of folks who had looked at Trump and liked a lot of his ideas and policies are now looking at this sudden reversal in Syria and Afghanistan and looking at Mattis's, just discontent with the situation and reevaluating where they stand.
Yeah. You know, a little later this hour, I want to pick up on that thought about, on the other hand, that there are a lot of people who say, well, the president promised to withdraw troops from Syria and Afghanistan, and he's keeping that promise. So we'll talk about that in just a second. But Leo Shane, stand by here for a moment, because I want to welcome into the conversation Admiral James Winnefeld. He is former vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the nation's number 2 ranking military officer. He's now a senior fellow at Harvard's Belfer Center and a distinguished professor at the Sam Nunn School of International Affairs at Georgia Tech. Admiral Winnefeld, welcome to On Point.
Well, happy holidays, and it's very nice to be with you, Megna.
Yeah, and thank you again for making time for us on this Christmas Eve. The news apparently does not relent for the holidays in the world that we're living in now. But just give us your take. I mean, you were vice chair at the Joint Chiefs right now. I mean, how would you describe this moment between the White House and the Pentagon?
Well, certainly there's a lot of people who are shocked and dismayed over Jim Mattis's departure, and particularly the way it happened. But I would also say that there are a lot of pretty steady people over in that building, in particular the Joint Chiefs, and to include the Chairman, Vice Chairman, and the Service Chiefs, mm-hmm. and the Chief of the National Guard Bureau, for that matter. These are all very loyal, steady people who will come together, they'll talk about this, and they know that their job is to step up and make sure that the new acting secretary, Pat Shanahan, is successful. And they will calmly carry on the business of the Pentagon as best they can. To be sure, they're disappointed in how this happened. But I'm not too worried about chaos erupting at the Pentagon over this decision.
Okay, so give me your take then. Let's step back here for a second, because I'm seeing here that as of this morning, Secretary Mattis has signed the order withdrawing U.S. forces from Syria. That's according to a Defense Department spokesman. They don't necessarily say that there's a timeline yet, but the withdrawal could begin in weeks. Now, this was the issue that brought about Secretary Mattis's decision to resign. I mean, what is your view on the precision and clarity of language he used in his resignation letter, like really rebuking the president and his leadership on the global stage?
Well, it clearly seemed to me as though Secretary Mattis had been working on this letter for a while. It doesn't read like something that was dashed off overnight. And clearly there are a lot of frustrations that have been building up with Secretary Mattis doing his job as the Secretary of Defense, as a loyal cabinet member he still was, I think, anxious over the Iran nuclear deal withdrawal, some of the direction he was getting on transgender troops in the military, the whole thing about the parade, troops to the southern border, the fact that perhaps his choice for chairman of the Joint Chiefs was not the one that the president selected, although both are very good people. And then Syria was the straw that broke the camel's back, as it were. And so I think Jim has been working on this for a while, and it was a very carefully worded, elegantly worded letter that oozes integrity, but very, very carefully states Jim's differences with the president over particularly how allies are treated. And I think this letter will go down in history as a very interesting example of a communication from a resigning department head to a president.
Mm. Well, we're going to take a break here in a minute. But Admiral Winnefeld, I just want to capitalize on your experience as a former member of the Joint Chiefs. I mean, not asking you to speak for anyone on the Joint Chiefs right now, but if you were there, what would you be focusing on the most? What would be top of mind for you in terms of the well-being, the strategic well-being of the United States for the next couple of months?
Well, I think that executing the national security strategy and its subordinate document, the national defense strategy, is certainly something that I would be using as overall guidance. And then I would stick to the fundamentals, the things that have made the department run well, that have made the military separation of civilian control over the military, making sure that that is very clearly understood by everybody in the department, and really just keeping focused on what we're actually doing around the world, on restoring the readiness and lethality of the department, which Jim Mattis is very focused on, and reassuring our allies wherever we can. Mm. So I think you've got good people there now. It's not going to be a disaster, but it certainly is a great disappointment to have Jim Mattis leaving as secretary.
Well, we are talking this hour about the president and the Pentagon, and we're joined today by Admiral James Winnefeld. He's former vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Leo Shane is also with us. He's a reporter for the Military Times, covers Congress, Veterans Affairs, and the White House. And we want to hear from you. What do you make of not only Secretary Mattis's resignation, but the fact that the U.S. is pulling out of Syria? Did the president do the right thing, but perhaps in an unorthodox way? We'll be back in just a moment. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about the president and the Pentagon and what comes next following the resignation of Secretary of Defense James Mattis. We heard over the weekend on Sunday that the president isn't going to wait until the end of February for Secretary Mattis to step down. And in fact, he's replacing him at the beginning of the next year. I'm joined today by Admiral James Winnefeld. He's a former vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Leo Shane is also with us. He's a reporter for the Military Times. And let's hear some of the reaction we've been getting from Congress. First of all, Kentucky Senator Republican Rand Paul, one of the few senators defending President Trump's decision to withdraw troops from Syria. Here he is speaking to Fox News on Thursday.
This is a very bold move for President Trump. It's exactly what he promised the American people. In fact, it's one of the reasons he won the election, is that he's different than so many Republicans that want to be everywhere all the time around the world, that they want us to be the world's policeman, that every war on the planet we've got to have our soldiers involved with. President Trump said he was going to treat America first.
That's Kentucky Senator Rand Paul. Here's Senate Foreign Relations Committee Chairman Republican Bob Corker on Jake Tapper on CNN's State of the Union yesterday, talking about the president's decision to pull troops from Syria.
I'm just saddened for our country. I'm saddened for the broken relationships with countries that have been with us. I'm saddened for the many Kurds and others that likely will be killed and slaughtered by either the Syrians or the Turks. I'm saddened for our country in being so unreliable.
That's Republican Senator Bob Corker. Leo Shane, let me turn back to you here, because you heard Corker there talking about seeing the U.S. as unreliable now. And Admiral Winnefeld before the break was saying that one of the major priorities for, say, the Joint Chiefs or top brass in the military will be to maintain and strengthen and reassure relationships with allies. I mean, how difficult is that going to be right now?
No, that's the question that comes here. You know, as Admiral pointed out, I expect the military to keep doing its job. I expect the military to be focused on things it traditionally is and be able to move ahead. The question is, what kind of message does this send to foreign allies? And even if you have the Joint Chiefs out there advocating for these strong military alliances and saying that the U.S. is a good partner, you know, they can see the political drama that's unfolding here too and the concerns that were raised by Secretary Mattis. You know, a lot of this, as I said before, is going to be predicated on who Trump's pick is. If Trump's next pick is someone who comes in with some of these same messages and says, no, I've talked to the president, and sure, there were disagreements with Secretary Mattis, but he is committed to our allies, and we're looking at more of the same, we're looking at the same kind of commitments, then, you know, maybe there's a reevaluation of the Syrian withdrawal that's a little different. Maybe you look at the Afghanistan position different. But if it's someone who comes in who has radically different views, foreign allies are going to see that, and they're going to question what is the country and what is the president's commitment to them moving forward.
Mm. Well, I mean, the president is responding to his critics just this morning. He's tweeted out, to those few senators who think I don't like or appreciate being allied with other countries, they are wrong. I do. What I don't like, however, is when many of these same countries take advantage of their friendship with the United States, both in military protection and trade. Admiral Winnefeld, your response to that?
Well, I think it's really interesting to understand what our allies actually do for us and the very important partnerships that we have with them. On the one hand, I think it's disingenuous to say that we have a lot of allies that are taking advantage of us, particularly militarily. We spend somewhere around 4% of our gross domestic product on our military. And what we've been complaining about is that the NATO allies in particular have not been spending all of them, the 2% that they've agreed to spend. But when you look at the fact that the U.S. is a global power, I would argue that 2% of our GDP spent on the military is in the Pacific and elsewhere, and that perhaps 2% of our GDP is spent on forces that are intended to bolster our allies in Europe. So it's not as unfair as a lot of people make it out to be. And the other point I'd add about allies is, if you want to be the global leader, if you want to enjoy everything that comes with that, like having your currency be the standard currency or being able to set internet standards, then you have to lead. And being in the lead means giving a little more sometimes than the people around you. So I think it's a little disingenuous to say that our allies are taking advantage of us. And that was one of the cheap shots, in a sense, the president took at Jim Mattis in one of his tweets.
But what about the specific concerns right now, and concerns is putting it lightly, of Kurdish allies in Syria? I mean, every piece of reporting I hear coming from them is shock, dismay, a sense of abandonment.
Well, you know, it's really important to understand why we went into Syria in the first place, both as a matter of international law and as a matter of policy. And it was exactly to do self-defense and collective self-defense with Iraq against the threat of ISIL, the imminent threat of ISIL to both of us. We were worried about ISIL attacking our country, and of course they had already attacked Iraq. So the real question here is ISIL defeated yet enough for us to withdraw troops? I think most people would say that it is not quite yet defeated enough to do that. We have a very small presence, only 2,000 people there, and it would make sense to stay just a little bit longer. And then on top of that, Magna, to your point, is the people who have been doing the lion's share of the fighting against ISIL in eastern Syria in particular are the Syrian Democratic Front, the Kurds, who have sacrificed quite a lot in this struggle. And it does not do the U.S. reputation a lot of good for us to leave those people high and dry, because there could be a bloodbath.
Okay. And so then, so since you brought us to this issue of ISIL or ISIS, I mean, when the president says that he does not know the U.S.'s primary envoy, the man who has been working with coalition partners in the fight against ISIS, McGurk, who also resigned in protest just a couple of days ago, how do you respond to that?
Well, you know, again, it boils down to the question of is ISIL or ISIS defeated in Iraq, and that is, or in eastern Syria in particular, and that is a tough call. It's not a black or white thing, but it seems to be true that ISIL still has pockets of resistance, that they still have a global network, that they still have resources in that region, and there's still more work to be done to really eliminate their ability to conduct terrorist attacks from Syria, which was our original intent going in there in the first place. So Brett McGurk clearly felt that they were not defeated, which is why he resigned. And, of course, Jim Mattis felt the same way. And the Kurds, again, who have been doing most of this fighting for us, are the ones who are going to be left holding the bag here.
Hmm. Well, let's go to a quick call here. Let's go to Joe, who's calling from Sarasota, Florida. Joe, you're on the air.
Hi, how you doing?
Doing well. What's your thought today?
So, I mean, just when I went, my first deployment to Afghanistan was I was there when we were just in, starting the initial surge, and then I went back again when we actually were starting to do a little bit of a withdrawal. And, you know, I think it's going to all come down to how the withdrawal is, you know, planned. But I just don't think that having the actual forces on the ground to fight is going to make a huge difference when we still have most of our structures with, like, special forces that are going to be training these guys on how to, you know, take care of the problem on their own. I just don't see the withdrawal being as big a deal as they make it seem.
I see. Joe, actually, interesting point, and thank you for your call. Leo Shane, let me turn to you quickly on that. Joe saying that you would still have infrastructure and special forces on the ground to continue training Kurdish troops, so perhaps this is not as the withdrawal isn't as significant as it seems.
No, look, I think he brings up a great point. The question is, how much faith do you have in who's there to conduct this withdrawal and to take care of it, and is it being done with reasonable expectations? I mean, you know, the actual policy of withdrawing from Syria, as Admiral pointed out, there's a lot of conversation, a lot of back and forth about what is our role there. Is ISIS defeated? Should we step away? The problem becomes the conflicting messages we're hearing from the administration. And, you know, as you said, Brett McGurk, as he steps away just a few weeks ago, had called it reckless if we were to pull troops away. He's the top envoy on the fight against ISIS. Now we have the White House saying the exact opposite. So I feel like this is less about the policy and more about the constant turmoil of the administration and which message do you want to believe, and is that message going to change in another week?
Mm. Well,
and to Joe's point, if I may, I believe we're doing more than just training the Kurds on the ground in eastern Syria. One of the very important things we're doing is providing what we call indirect fires, so that when a Kurdish forces, let's say, attacking an ISIL force, we are providing an awful lot of both artillery and air power to back those guys up. And it's really important for them to have that indirect fire or direct fire capability to take on an enemy that they're attacking. So it is more than just training. And from day one, when we went back into Iraq, we've had a great partnership with the Kurds, in which our special forces operators were actually calling in fire for them to make sure it was done safely and correctly. Mm. If they can't do that anymore, that's going to be a big impact on the Syrian Democratic Forces.
Mm. Well, Admiral Winnefeld and Leo Shane, hang on here for 1 second, because I want to bring in Derek Chollet into the conversation. He's Executive Vice President and Senior Advisor for Security and Defense Policy at the German Marshall Fund of the United States. He's served as Assistant Secretary of Defense and as well on the National Security Council. He's with us from New York. Derek Chollet, welcome to you, and thank you again for joining us here on Christmas Eve.
Great to be here. Happy holidays.
Okay, so here we're sort of discussing consequences of the president's decision to pull troops out of Syria. Let's just start there with you. I mean, did the president do the right thing? Is it, you know, can it be done in an orderly way? What are the consequences?
Well, as the previous conversation has said, you can have an honest debate about the wisdom of keeping troops in Syria. I happen to think that there is wisdom in maintaining a force presence in Syria. It's a lesson that those of us in the Obama administration learned in Iraq after the pullout in 2011. And what we saw happen in the aftermath of that pullout was a deterioration in the Iraqi security forces. And that led to the rise of ISIS. And so I think many are concerned that if the U.S. pulls out of Syria when the job is not yet finished, we will see just a resurgence of ISIS in the months ahead, leading to a situation in which perhaps the U.S. has to go back again. Mm. That said, I think what's more concerning, certainly to folks in the Pentagon, is the way that this decision came about. It seemed to have come about with very little internal deliberation. There was not the normal decision-making process that Sandy and I were very familiar with in the Obama administration, where deputies would meet and the cabinet would meet and there'd be a long discussion with the president. This just seemed to come about almost out of nowhere. And according to reports, there was several days of very dramatic discussion inside the administration to try to talk the president out of this decision. But he remained determined to go ahead, and it was done without real consultation of our allies. Allies were caught by surprise, and particularly, as has been noted, our allies on the ground, our Kurdish partners, who now, in the wake of U.S. withdrawal, will be left vulnerable.
So is that the real long-term consequence here? Because Admiral Winnefeld, or Sandy, as you were referring to him a minute ago, earlier in the show, he was telling us that, you know, of course, the United States military is capable of handling, you know, whatever transition comes at the top of the Pentagon here. And that even if this was done seemingly hastily or in an unorthodox manner, the steadiness of the military needs not be questioned. So is the long-term challenge then, again, with our allies, with American reliability abroad, with what might happen on the ground in Syria or Afghanistan?
Well, look, I don't think we can overstate the degree of tumult right now inside the U.S. national security bureaucracy. And I think it's important to note that after what I think is one of the more dramatic weeks we've had in quite some time in U.S. national security, this has not been a response to a foreign crisis, some event thrust upon us. This is entirely of the president's own making. And I don't think we have seen this play out fully. In other words, two days ago, General Mattis was going to leave in 2 months. We find out yesterday he's going to leave in a week. And I would expect we're going to have further departures when this is all said and done at the senior ranks. DOD, the Department of Defense, which throughout the last 2 years during the Trump administration has been seen as an island of stability within this government. And General Mattis, Secretary Mattis in particular, was almost like a security blanket for Americans and allies around the world because people had faith in his ability to soften some of the president's harder edges, to try to talk him out of rash decisions. Well, he's going to be gone. And there's a real question about what comes next.
Well, I mean, in
absolutely.
Sorry, Derek, I didn't mean to cut you off there. But Leo Shane, let me turn to you on that point exactly, because we haven't yet talked in detail about Patrick Shanahan, who's going to be acting Secretary of Defense here. I mean, what do we know of him? Would he have the ability to do exactly what Derek Chollet was saying about communicating with the president and serving in that same sort of advisory capacity that James Mattis did?
The short answer is yes, he has that ability. The question is whether or not the president wants to hear it. This is someone who is well respected. Was brought in, a former Boeing executive, has been pushing a lot of efficiency and government reform efforts in the Pentagon. By all accounts, he's being considered for the permanent spot and is liked by the White House, but the question is what exactly are his views on some of these? Does he have a softer view than Mattis did on maybe some of these alliances that would better align with what the White House is looking for?
Well, and then the issue is we don't really know, because other than serving as deputy secretary for the past, year or so, he's been in the private sector beyond that. No government or military experience.
Yes, and that's there's always some unknowns of how much folks' views can shift during then too. I mean, we know that he's liked by the administration. We know he's under consideration, but the bigger question is not so much Shanahan and in the acting role. It's who's going to be the permanent replacement, and what is Trump looking for? Is Trump looking for another Mattis, another big forceful personality who can give him strong military advice and is well respected, or is Trump looking for somebody who has a certain viewpoint, who is going to tell him what he wants to hear, and maybe does not bring the same level of confidence to the folks in uniform?
Well, Derek Chollet,
Admiral
Winnefeld, go ahead.
I was just saying, one of the things we have to remember is to Leo Shane's point is that whomever President Trump nominates to be the next Secretary of Defense is going to have to be confirmed by the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be a very interesting process. So if it's somebody who is a Trump sycophant who just you know, does whatever the president wants him to do, that person may not get confirmed by the Senate. So it's going to be a very interesting process here over the next month or two. In the midst of all of the hearings that the Senate Armed Services Committee already has to do on the budget and the like, by the way, that's one of the reasons why I think that President Trump is letting General Mattis go earlier than expected, because he does not want to have General Mattis on the Hill during those hearings, being asked about all this bloody mess that's going on.
Right. You know, it seems to me that the president is showing a pattern in who in recent appointments he has made, that he's looking for people who are more closely aligned with his views and his goals. So we'll see what that means for the Department of Defense. But Admiral Winnefeld, Leo Shane, and Derek Chollet, stand by here for just a second. We've got to take a quick break. We're talking about the Pentagon and the president and what might happen next. We'll be right back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about the president and the Pentagon and what comes next for both of them, as the president has decided he's not going to wait until the end of February for the resignation of Secretary of Defense James Mattis. Mattis will be out at the beginning of 2019. So we're speaking today with Admiral James Winnefeld. We're speaking also with Leo Shane and Derek Chollet. And let's listen to some reaction from abroad, for example, to the news of Secretary Mattis's resignation. This is French President Emmanuel Macron. He was in Chad yesterday visiting French troops stationed there. And he said he didn't mince words about what he thought of President Trump's decision and what he thinks of outgoing Defense Secretary James Mattis.
About our American allies, I deeply regret the decision taken in Syria, and I would like to pay tribute here to General Mattis and the words that accompanied his decision. An ally should be reliable, coordinate with other allies. Mattis understood this.
That's Emmanuel Macron in Chad yesterday. Back here in the United States, Illinois Senator Democrat Dick Durbin was on NBC's Meet the Press yesterday. He, too, talked about Defense Secretary James Mattis' resignation.
I was one of many senators who privately sat down with General Mattis and said, please stay. Stay as long as you possibly can. We desperately need your mature voice, your patriotism in the room when this president's making life or death decisions about national security. But it obviously reached a breaking point. It breaks my heart that he's going to step aside. We counted on him to be there and to stop this president from his worst impulse.
That's Democrat Dick Durbin. We've got some comments here coming in online. Peter Duveen says, I am delighted with Trump's decision to withdraw troops and his early dismissal of Mattis. Mattis is not boss. He does not call the shots. The president does. So that's the view from one listener online. Let's go to Lynn, who's calling from Niantic, Connecticut. Lynn, you're on the air. Lynn, are you there? All right, looks like we lost Lynn. So let's go to Rita, who's calling from Phoenix, Arizona. Rita, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So my greatest concern is I could actually have supported the president's withdrawal if he had done it in a thoughtful and respectful manner. I think it's incredibly important to let people, the folks on the ground in country, know that you understand the sacrifice they made by allowing us to be there. I think the purposely disrespectful way that Mr. Trump has done this is kind of like throwing up a billboard for ISIL recruitment. I really see it as him decreasing the security of Americans across the globe. And in the likelihood of American future conflicts, it's going to be really hard for this country to draw allies who have something substantial to bring to the table and would be willing to risk that we would stand by them if the tables turned.
Well, Rita, thank you for your call. Derek Chollet, let me turn back to you. What's your response to Rita?
Well, I think she's absolutely right. One of the things that I've heard as I've talked to foreign officials over the last several years are their concerns about the reliability of the U.S. They follow very closely what President Trump says and what he tweets. And when he talks about alliances like NATO as things that are not in the national interest of the U.S., or he complains that allies are ripping off the American people, or when he makes decisions in the way that he did last week with the withdrawal from Syria and possibly in Afghanistan, and then fires the most reliable or causes the resignation of the most reliable cabinet official to foreign audiences, it raises a lot of concerns about their ability to trust the United States. Leo's absolutely right. Who comes next will be absolutely critical in trying to maintain some semblance of reliability and trust that foreign officials and governments will have in the United States in terms of who comes next in the Pentagon. However, Mattis's resignation letter provides a template for those confirmation hearings they're going to be coming. And even though he won't be testifying as a Secretary of Defense before the Congress, I do expect that the Democratic-controlled House of Representatives and the House Armed Services Committee will invite former Secretary Mattis to come testify before that committee and talk about the concerns that he outlines in his letter.
Ah, okay. I mean, you do expect that? Because I was reading that, there was perhaps less certainty that he would agree, that he would testify.
I'm quite sure he might want to try to, you know, remain in the shadows. But I'm quite sure the Democrats in the House are going to be very interested in having Secretary Mattis testify, just as he would have had to testify if he were still the sitting Secretary of Defense in these budget hearings that are already on the calendar.
All
right. So we have not heard the last of this.
Okay, so let's go to Bert, who's calling from Menominee, Michigan. Bert, you're on the air.
Hi, Meghna. I just got two quick points to really make for your guests. One, Trump said since day one of him running, he was going to leave, and he said he wasn't going to tell the date like Obama did to ruin it like he did before when Obama pulled his troops. And the second thing is, why do we have to be the world police? That makes more enemies of us. When we're fighting all these terrorist groups and all their splinter cells jump on and their splinter cells become bigger cells, everybody hates America then. Maybe we should just keep our nose out of certain business. And plus, isn't it an illegal war since Syria never approved of us, the Syrian government never approved of us being there?
Mm-hmm. Bert, thank you for your call. Admiral Winnefeld, would you like to respond to Bert?
Bert, and good to hear from Menominee, Michigan, which is right next to where the Navy's littoral combat ships are built on the Great Lakes. I would respond first to the second thing that Bert said, and that is the implication that this is an illegal war. And in fact, there really are only three, under international law, legal uses of force. One is if you have a UN Security Council resolution, which we do not have for Syria. Another is if the host nation invites you in to help them with a counterinsurgency or something like that, which is the basis for our efforts in Iraq, one of the bases. But the third one is legitimate self-defense against an imminent threat, including collective self-defense with an ally or a partner who requests your support. Remember, ISIL happened very quickly. It swept through eastern Syria and into Iraq. And Iraq asked for our assistance under self-defense. And because that threat was originating from Syria, the doctrine of collective self-defense allowed us to go into Syria to defend ourselves and our partners. So that's why we're there. It's a legal use of force. The real question, though, is at what point does the need for that use of force end? And I think that's what Bert is asking, in one sense, is ISIL defeated? I think many people would say they're not yet defeated. Mm-hmm. But the president, perhaps based on his most recent phone call with President Erdogan of Turkey, believes they are defeated. And that's why he's bringing these troops home.
Yeah. Well, and then to Bert's first point that he was making, or his other point that he was making, that he sees U.S. military engagement in foreign nations as part of what, you know, fans the flames of anti-American terrorism. I mean, there is something profound to that, isn't there? I mean, I'm just hearing, for example, for the past many months, voices out of Yemen, and I'm not saying that these are people who are going to become terrorists at all, but you know, Yemeni people saying, when we see those bombs the Saudis are dropping on us, we know where they're made, that they're made in the United States, that these are the very things that can sort of tip over into radicalization.
Yeah, Megan, it's an undeniable point, and that's where there's a certainly a healthy tension. And this goes all the way back to the first Gulf War, back in 1990. Remember that the genesis of Osama bin Laden's hatred of the United States was the fact that we stationed forces in Saudi Arabia to, in fact, help defend Saudi Arabia and to certainly reject Iraq's invasion of Kuwait. So Bert has a very good point there, but that also has to be taken in contrast to the need to defend ourselves against threats like that, and sort of a snowball or a vicious circle, if you will, in the act of defending yourself from the threats, are you creating more threats? And Bert has a very good point.
Mm. Well, let's go to Lynn, who's calling from Niantic, Connecticut. Lynn, are you there with us this time?
Yes, I am.
All right, go ahead.
I'm also right next to Groton, Connecticut, which in fact is making those bombs from Electric Boat and the submarines. And I'm one part that we haven't been addressing, what I find is kind of interesting, is the people who are celebrating that we are, leaving Syria. And I notice Russia is quite celebrating and is very happy we're leaving there. And I'm wondering what we owe Putin. And maybe that is why we're doing it also, because Trump has not given us any real reason why we're leaving.
Mm. Lynn,
and I'd like that to be addressed.
Thank you for your call, Lynn. Derek Chollet, I'm going to turn that one to you. We haven't actually talked about Russia and its interest in Syria yet. So what do you have to say to Lynn?
Well, there's no question that one of the beneficiaries of Trump's abrupt decision to pull out of Syria is Russia. This has validated President Putin's decision of several years ago to escalate Russia's role inside Syria. Another beneficiary is Iran, and one of the purposes of the U.S. maintaining the U.S. presence in Syria, and one of the reasons why President Trump's national security team, the National Security Advisor John Bolton, Mattis, and Secretary of State Pompeo were so against this move of withdrawing troops, was because the other part of the U.S. strategy is to prevent Iran from gaining a toehold inside Syria that it can use to threaten allies like Israel, for example. So without a U.S. military presence there, it becomes much easier for Iran to maintain and increase its influence in the region. And so I think that's one of the other reasons why this is such a concerning move. And it's confusing because it goes against what the administration's stated policy is, which is for the United States to be more of a player in the region, to be more militarily engaged, and to be pushing back more meaningfully against countries like Iran. One can only speculate what the motive is here. And of course, there's a larger conversation about this president's approach towards Russia and Vladimir Putin in particular. I know of no evidence to suggest that there is some quid pro quo. But yet we have to add this as yet another item to the list of things that this president has done that had been favorable to Russian interests.
Yeah. Well, let's get one more call. Matt is calling from Syracuse, New York. Matt, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for taking my call. I was just calling in response to the email and the one caller discussing about how Trump is the boss and Mattis is not. I was active duty Army, and General Mattis was a household name for years and is still a household name and well-respected. And I think the issue is with us pulling out, yes, we should not probably be overseas, but you cannot leave the power vacuum again. And everybody wants to criticize Obama, but the same thing's going to happen. And downsizing Afghanistan, I have several friends that died there, and now it's the question of for what? And that's just the question that is annoying me and annoying my fellow service members. And Donald Trump is destroying stuff and not listening to the people who know, who didn't dodge the draft, who signed up and did their part. I respect General Mattis, and I wish he was still in the administration. Thank you.
Matt, thank you so much for your call. Leo Shane, what's your reaction when you hear Matt asking that profoundly important question for all the members of the military who are serving now, who have served in Afghanistan? I mean, you heard him say, you know, if the U.S. pulls out now in his mind prematurely or from Syria, having served or even having given their lives for what?
Well, look, and this is the key point to all of this conversation, right? Because there are thousands of troops who are serving overseas who are putting their lives on the line for foreign policies that they don't necessarily get to vote on, and they get pulled around here. So they want to know that they can have faith in their leaders. They want to know that the folks who are making those decisions have their best interests at heart. And you know, I think for whatever criticisms you want to level against Secretary Mattis, he was beloved. He was someone who had served not too long ago, who had served overseas, and who really showed a lot of respect for service members. So there was a lot of faith that as long as he was in the room, they knew their interests were being protected. That's not to say that the next person can't bring the same level of faith and of focus on that core mission, but it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough to find someone who is at least as widely known and widely respected in military circles as Secretary Mattis to just, if nothing else, be the person in the room that a rank and file soldier can look up to and say, okay, well, if he's there, at least I know somebody's talking on my behalf.
Mm-hmm. Well, all three of you have mentioned that one of the big questions now is who's going to be next as the head of the Pentagon here. And I'm seeing that there's a group of bipartisan lawmakers. They're urging Air Force Secretary, the current Air Force Secretary for the top position in the Pentagon, Ted Lieu of California and Joni Ernst of Iowa are urging the president to choose Air Force Secretary Heather Wilson. Admiral Winnefeld, is she a good choice or likely? I should say likely choice for the president, because if I remember correctly, I mean, Heather Wilson's sort of worldview is pretty closely aligned with that of James Mattis's.
Well, you know, as a former military officer, I'm a little hesitant to weigh in with opinions on who should be the next Secretary of Defense.
Mm-hmm.
Though, to answer your question, I think she would be a perfectly fine choice. She's done a good job leading the Department of the Air Force through some very difficult budgetary times. And, the Air Force has got an awful lot on its plate, and it's having to decide how to manage scarce resources to fulfill its many, many different missions. And I think she's done a very good job of managing that. It's a different level entirely when you get to the Secretary of Defense level, because it's no longer about managing internally a department, but so much of that job has to do with external relations, relations with allies, relations with Congress, and walking the fine line, particularly in this administration, of trying to do the right thing with those two constituencies, and with a boss you work for who's you know, a little bit tougher on those two constituencies. But I think she would be a fine choice.
Mm. Well, you know what? We're fresh out of time here. And Derek, I heard you there, but unfortunately, I've got just about 30 seconds to go to wrap up the program this hour. So let me just say to Admiral James Winnefeld, former vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and now a senior fellow at Harvard's Belfer Center as well. Admiral Winnefeld, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's been a pleasure to be with you, Megan.
And Leo Shane, reporter for the Military Times, covering Congress, Veterans Affairs, and the White House. Leo Shane, thanks as well.
Thank you. Anytime.
And Derek Chollet, Executive Vice President and Senior Advisor for Security and Defense Policy at the German Marshall Fund of the United States, author of The Long Game, How Obama Defied Washington and Redefined America's Role in the World. Derek Chollet, thank you as well.
Thanks for having me. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to all three of you. And speaking of the holidays, everyone, we're going to be taking a couple of days off from the show. You'll be hearing On Point, but you'll be hearing some of our best shows from the past several months. But David Folkenflik will be back live on Friday with the year in the news. So happy holidays to everyone. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.